Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good Tuesday evening all to you, and welcome. And thank you again for joining us here for another Red Zone Blitz. Frat House Mike coming to you here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. The Red Zone Blitz, bringing you the NFL in everything that just got done happening as we have now reached the exact midpoint of the season. But before we get to that, it's election day across America. Did you get out and vote today? I certainly hope you did. Now, if you're listening from our neck of the woods, please do not turn us off and go running to the polls. Because you only have an hour left, and I want you to stay right there and listen to our program. But if you're in other sections of the country, please make sure that you have done your duty today by getting out to your polling places and voting. And since it is election day, I thought I'd open up this evening with just a real quick question. I just pointed out we are at the midpoint of the NFL season, and I don't care who your team is. Doesn't matter to me what team is your favorite. My question to you is this: who would you elect as the MVP of your team now at the midpoint of the season? And, I'd like to know. Give us a holler here. 347-826-9964. It's election day. And I'm asking you to do your duty. Give us a call, 347-826-9964, and let us know who you would elect as your MVP of your team so far midway through the season. I've got Brandon with us. Brandon,
hello.
Who would you elect as your MVP?
No brainer. It's Gronk. Got to be Gronk.
Wow.
From my Patriots, yep. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Brady obviously is the quarterback.
With that he just got done having?
Yeah, but that team lives and dies by Gronk. They're a much better team. Everybody else is a better player. He draws more coverage. He's just the man. So
wow.
I'd have to go him.
Wow. All right. Well, fellow Patriots fans, or you can hear it from one Patriots fan there. He's saying Rob Gronkowski. How about you? 347-826-9964. Now, I just mentioned, Brandon, we were at the midpoint. We just hit the exact midpoint of the season because that was week 9. It's a 17-week season now. People always forget that. They seem to forget about the bye week. You know, they look at it strictly perhaps in terms of their own team and they go, it's 16 weeks. No, it's 17. So you have to wait until really week 9. And at that point, we are now over the midpoint of the exact season. And there were quite a few games that came up this past week, and there were some other stories that hopefully we're going to have some time to get to here this evening. But there were quite a few games that kind of jumped off the page at me. And let's start it off with the shellacking that the San Diego Chargers took from the Miami Dolphins, 37-0. This was a home game for the Dolphins, but still, nonetheless, I don't think that that's exactly what one would have expected from the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers you know, we've been talking about him here on this program now for a couple of weeks. I know you have, Brandon. You've been kind of high on the Chargers, thinking, well, hey, that division seems to be the Chargers and the Denver Broncos. And who's to say, well, maybe the Chargers can't win that division. But boy, oh boy, Phillip Rivers put a stinking on the other day. 12 of 23, 139 yards, no touchdowns, three interceptions, a 31.0 QB rating? This is an anomaly, right? I mean, everybody's entitled to a bad game. That's what it had to be, right?
I don't know about that. They've been having quite a few bad games. I mean, at one point they were 5-1. Now they're sitting at 5-4. I mean, that's three losses in a row. And, yes, they're on a bye this week. They're going to get some players back. They're going to get Ryan Matthews back. Maybe they can, you know, heal up a little and come back to play the way they were playing. But, yeah, they had a great start, and maybe the wheels kind of fell off.
Mm-hmm.
Might show, have an indication of maybe some of the early games they had were against weaker opponents. I mean, I'd have to look at it game by game. But, I mean, I know the last few games they've been playing better opponents. One was against Denver, which Denver beat them. And, you know, I guess Miami's turning out to be a little better team than they were in the beginning of the year. The beginning of the year, they were just god-awful. And now they're starting to come around. So, you know, things can change. You know, it's funny. I noticed on certain teams, and I had brought it up, at least with the in reference to the Denver Broncos. They were a better running team when their primary back got hurt. And, you know, I think Hillman has actually been a better back for them than Monte Ball was. The Dolphins are kind of the same way. I mean, no Sean Marino really didn't do much for them, and now all of a sudden Lamar Miller, he's looking like the man down there. Now, he did leave this game a little early, so his stats aren't the greatest. He had a little shoulder injury there at the end of the first half. So even in a half of the game, he has 11 carries for 49 yards and a touchdown. So, uh-huh. I mean, he's pretty solid. The initial report I read on the shoulder was not a big deal, but, you know, now they're saying it may be, you know, the AC joint. They don't know for sure, so we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out with him.
Let's stick with Miami for a moment, because I know that this is not a team that you're horribly enamored with.
No.
And yet, nonetheless, Ryan Tannehill had himself a pretty darn good day yesterday and did it last week as well. On Sunday, 24-34, 268 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Right now, I mean, the guy's thrown for 14 touchdowns and only six interceptions. And he's worked his way up to 18th overall in yardage on the list. Let me just resync this a minute and see what it tells me as far as the QB rating. But, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, not that – I mean, he's actually playing pretty well. It seems to me, though, that the key to Miami right now might be that defense. Absolutely incredible. The past 2-3 weeks, the Miami defense has just been on fire.
Well, yeah, I actually kind of think, you know, both sides really are. I mean, Lamar Miller has been sparking the offense along with, you know, as you pointed out, Tannehill's playing a lot better than he had been. And Clay, the tight end, has actually been getting involved, I'll get it out, a lot more. And, you know, Mike Wallace is still the whiny little prima donna that he was all along. But he throws in, his catches in the game. You know, and they actually, you know, they've been putting together decent performances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll wait to see. I mean, like I said, we'll have to wait and see, you know, how it goes moving forward. But, I mean, they started off horribly. I mean, you and I were kind of joking privately, you know, who was worse, the Dolphins or the Jets? Well, clearly it's the Jets now.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know,
and we'll
Miami's
be talking about
stronger. Miami's
we'll be talking about
stronger.
Them in a moment, but Miami defense right now ranked number 3 in the entire league, only allowing 18.9 points a game. That's not shabby, shabby at all. So I, you know, the defense I really think is what probably is holding that team up at this point. But if you go over and take a look at those standings again, over in the AFC East, you got the Patriots up at the top 7-2. And then Buffalo and Miami are tied for second at 5-3. Seems to me that's a little bit questionable. I think you'd almost have to give the edge to Miami, not Buffalo. You understand what I'm saying, Brandon?
Well, the reason they're ranked higher is the Buffalo played one more division game. They're 2-1 in the division. Miami's 1-1. That's the first tiebreaker. That's how they get to that number. So I wouldn't worry about that. You know,
but I'm
it's
just
not
saying eye test. If you go use the eye test, I think you'd have to give the edge to Miami, wouldn't you?
I don't know. You would. I obviously you like Miami better. I have to give Kyle Orton and the Bills some props. He's been playing pretty good since they put him in there, and their defense is nothing to sneeze at either. So I'll be interested. I think Miami and Buffalo have played once, so I'll be interested to see how they do the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking back now to see if I can get the score from the first round, and it's not looking. Maybe they haven't played yet. They have a game coming up on November 13th against Miami. Buffalo does. No, they did play week two, and Buffalo won 29-10. So, they get to play again. The first game was in Buffalo. The second game's in Miami. We'll see if they get a split. It generally happens a lot, with division rivals.
It seems Buffalo's come back to earth, though, since week two of the NFL. That's just my eye test operating there, to be honest with you, but I don't know.
I don't know so much about that. I don't know that they've come back to earth. I think they're kind of a tale of two different teams, because they switched after week four from E.J. Manuel to Orton, and Orton's been winning a lot more,
Right.
I mean, they lost Spiller. Fred Jackson's been out, so they have no running game to speak of for right now. So, Fred Jackson's close to returning, so that might give them a little break in that position. But I don't know. We'll see. Miami. You got to. I'll give them a little bit of props. They have been playing better, but I don't know. Them and Buffalo, they're pretty close in my book. I mean, they're very similar teams. Neither one of them has an outstanding quarterback. Neither one of them has, like a premier back. But they have guys who can do the job. I mean, Lamar Miller's, probably closer to a premier back than anything Buffalo has. Fred Jackson, when he gets back, he's still 33, 34, and that's really long in the tooth for, running back. So, we'll see going down the stretch.
Right.
With these two.
All right. Let's jump over to, we don't have to spend a heck of a lot of time on it, but a game that kind of just jumped. I don't know. Maybe it's just because of this team, but the Minnesota Vikings just keep jumping out at me. And I know that we've talked about them numerous times just in the past couple of weeks right here on this program. But at home, they beat the Washington Redskins 29-26. They beat them by 3. The line on it was that the Vikings were favored by 2. But I'm going to tell you something, Brandon. I heard a lot of people saying that this was going to be the week that Washington was going to be able to turn it around. RG3 was going to be back in the lineup, and things were going to start getting better again with Washington. That, Minnesota, there's just way too many youthful, pieces yet put together. And yet, Minnesota found a way to win this game again. And in many respects, continue to maintain at least some relevance there in the NFC North with a 4-5 record. What do you make of it?
Well, you're right. I mean, the Vikings have been more or less just kind of hanging around. They're not completely out of it. They don't have the best record in the division. They do have a bye coming up, though, which could help them. I don't think it's this week, or maybe it is this week. They might be on bye this week. I know it's either this week or next week. But, when you're right around this, you're right around 500 going into your bye for a team like this who's playing a rookie quarterback, their running back situation's kind of been in flux all season with the Adrian Peterson issue, which is kind of coming to a head now. We'll see in the next week or so. And yes, they are on bye this week. So,
right.
that probably gives Goodell and the NFL another week to deal with Peterson without having to, make a big deal about it right now. But, the Vikings have been, running, kind of patchwork. They have two backs. They have, Gerald McKinnon and Matt Asiata. They're kind of sharing the role back there. Bridgewater's, he's still playing the same way. He's not stellar, but he's not making mistakes. I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire, statistically, but he's not throwing picks either. He's doing what it takes to, to be in the game or win the game. So, and as far as the other side of this coin, Washington, I mean, it is Griffin's first game back, and, they, if you think about it from an offense, this is the third time. Technically, it's the fourth time. They started with, Griffin, went to Cousins. You know, he was all right for a couple of weeks. Then they went to McCoy. He's been playing good. Now they're back to Griffin. So it probably takes a little bit to gather a rhythm back, especially considering, you're dealing with three different guys and you've switched four times now as far as an offensive thing. And they do have a bye this week. So maybe they can use the bye and get things a little bit more in sync. It wasn't a horrible showing for them. I mean, they played in Minnesota. They lost by three. Griffin's numbers aren't horrible. I mean, one pick, that's not great, but, he has a touchdown. Alfred Morris did his 19 carries, 92 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, DeSean Jackson, had a nice game.
Yep.
I don't know that this team's they just may be out of sync a little bit because of, constantly switching quarterbacks. So, I'm not ready to sound the alarm. If you read, some things on some of the, websites out there, they're talking about dissension and lack of leadership in the locker room and, all these other things. It's like, well, you're always going to get this when the team's not winning. I did read one rumor this week that the call for Griffin to start came from the owner, not from the head coach. So, you're already dealing with a little dissension there. I've never heard anything that substantiated that as 100% fact, but, we've seen other owners, like the guy down there in Dallas who likes to make calls from the owner's box. Now, he does carry the title GM, but, Dan Snyder doesn't do that. But apparently, from what I read, there was a report that Dan Snyder told Jay Gruden that Griffin was starting because he was healthy. So, We'll see. They got a bye. I think it can only help them. There's very few teams a bye doesn't help. I don't think a lot of the teams like the bye, but I think it helps a lot of the teams. If you know what I'm saying.
Just talking about Bridgewater for a second.
Okay.
I like what I've seen from him as a rookie coming in off the bench, as he's had to do. 60% completion rate, I think, which is very good for a young rookie quarterback coming in. He has three touchdowns. He does have five interceptions at this point right now. But it seems that the Minnesota defense has not allowed those interceptions, those turnovers, to actually come back and bite them too badly. That's where the difference, I think, has been so far. And I've just kind of moved things over here for a moment. Brendan, I had to make some switches because, this one computer is completely frozen.
Uh-oh.
So I can't do a darn thing with that. So I'm now trying to work off of just one. So I'm going to try to just do that for a moment. Let's go over and we're going to take a look at the Arizona Cardinals. The only team right now at this point that are 7-1, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? 7-1? Do I have the right number?
They are 7-1.
Yeah, I'm working blind here without all my numbers right in front of me. But they are now the only team that is 7-1, and they went into Dallas and, took care of that one without too much difficulty. 28-17. It was rumored for the longest time, that Tony Romo was going to play. Well, listen, a lot of people were able to see through that, that was nothing more than the team's way of just trying to drag it out. Romo probably was never going to play that game at all. Brandon Whedon stepped in, and, Brandon Whedon, I think, showed why, he's Brandon Whedon, with the exception of, take away that, one quarter he had the week before, where everybody was like, Whedon, he was able to keep things going, no problem. 18 of 33, 183, one touchdown, two interceptions, and a 55.5 QB rating. There are some right now that I have heard speculating that, Arizona, obviously we're going to give them their credit. They're 7-1. They're the only team in the entire league that is. But they've got chinks in the armor. They're beatable. I don't know. What's your thinking?
Every power ranking I've seen, be it NFL, PFT, or ESPN, all have the Cardinals number one. I think they're the team to beat right now. I mean, I don't see anybody in the NFC beating them. Maybe, you know, maybe if Green Bay gets healthier, you know, maybe if New Orleans can find out they're missing pieces. You know, Arizona's just beaten the two best teams in the East. Back-to-back weeks, they beat Philadelphia and Dallas. I mean, I don't know. That's flexing some serious muscle. And, you know, they've clearly are in the division everybody said to start the year was the best division in football. And, you know, you can't say that even though the records aren't the greatest, Seattle and 49ers are still really good teams. And St. Louis is looking better and better every week. So, you know, the Arizona sitting there at 7-1. You know, they haven't played many division games yet. They've only played one. So, but that was one game they played was in Seattle, and they beat Seattle. So, you know, you gotta give this team, you know, all their due right now, because, you know, I don't think there's a better team in the NFL right now. Period. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there'd be some good games. I mean, the Broncos, the Patriots, some of the AFC teams, you know, that are strong would probably be a good game against the Cardinals. But the Cardinals' defense is fierce. I mean, they may have lost some people in the off season and, you know, had some injuries, but they're still one of the best defenses in football. And they, you know, their offense is certainly doing what it takes to win. Carson Palmer's, you know, it's almost like he's matured in Bruce Arians' offense after the second year. And, you know, he missed a few games with that shoulder problem, but ever since he's been back, he's been golden.
It looks like they're trying to find, or at least they're working their way back into getting Fitzgerald in as being an integral part of the game plan as well. He had himself 5 receptions for 70 yards. That coming off of a very good game the week before as well, where he had a couple of long receptions in that game. So they're working that one back in. They obviously, the defense obviously too, that number one rushing defense obviously found a way to shut down at least. Well, okay, that's the wrong word. There I go again. It's not shut down, it's contained. And that's what they did a pretty good job of with DeMarco Murray, 19 carries for just 79 yards, no touchdowns for him. So defense came to play. I know at this point right now, midway through the season, it's difficult not to say that Arizona would be the number one NFC team. And yet at the same time, I can understand where people would come back and go, well, all right, hold on, let's just wait on this, though, for a couple of moments, because I'm not sure if it's exactly the right, you know, if it's if that's going to be accurate or not. So,
well, I mean, okay, here's what you can do. If you want to break it down by, like, all your key positions, I mean, they got a decent quarterback. Carson Palmer's playing pretty well. Andre Ellington's been probably the second best running back in the league, short of DeMarco Murray, or at least in the top, let's just say 5, without, you know, looking at all the stats. You know, you just mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. He's been great for years. Michael Floyd has kind of not been as big a role as they thought he would, but he's still there. John Brown. You know, you just go down the list. This team's stacked on offense. And on defense, they still have Patrick Peterson. He's, you know, one of the best corners in the game. The defensive line's constantly getting pressure on the opposing quarterback. And DeMarco Murray, I read a report, he said that team's just impossible to run against. They show you an 8-9-man front all day. So, you know, I don't know. They're playing solid football on both sides of the ball, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly not counting them out. I think they're the team to beat right now. They're clearly the NFC, you know, leader in the clubhouse for the, you know, for right now at the halfway point. I don't see anybody even, you know, remotely close to them. I mean, they've pretty much beaten everybody, and, you know, I don't see anybody out there, you know, that can put up a, you know, a big fight to them right now.
And a team that many people probably would have thought could have been one of the big NFC bad boys, the 49ers dropped to 4-4 last weekend when they got beaten at home by the St. Louis Rams 13-10. Huh? What in the world is wrong with this? You know, and suddenly, Brandon, the rumors have all kicked up once again that there are all kinds of problems inside the 49ers, that wait for it. This is going to be a team that's going to be looking at all kinds of administrative changes, coaching changes, if not before the end of the season, certainly by the end of the season. St. Louis Rams come in there with literally a team that has kind of been put together with bubble gum and paper clips, and they knock them off, and San Francisco is not showing really any offense at all. I mean, this is really kind of a head scratcher, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a little bit. You know they have the talent, and you know they've clearly been one of the better teams in the NFC the last 3-4 years. They've been going to the conference title game regularly. They were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I don't understand why there's so much dissension, and it seems to be directed at Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh, if he's fired, will have a job. He will have a laundry list of teams, signing up for his services. He could end up in your favorite college team, his alma mater back there in Michigan. Who knows? He's going to have his choice. If he gets fired, he will have his choice of jobs. And, I believe next year is his last season under contract. So, either plays as a lame duck, which no coach likes doing, and it's really not good for the franchise, especially, if you look at it. I mean, you got a guy of his caliber with his record, with what he's accomplished, and you're going to let him make him play as a lame duck. I don't see that happening. I think they'll either, somehow make up, or the owner will step in and possibly, it seems him and the general manager can't get along. One of the others either going to have to go, or, they're going to have to learn how to coexist. And I don't see that happening at this point. So, it's probably going to be one or the other. And it's for whatever reason, it appears like it's going to be Harbaugh who's going to get the ticket out of town. So.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he could, from sounds of things I've heard, he could just go right across the bay, and play and, coach the Raiders. That's an option. Michigan in the college ranks. And I'm sure there'll be other teams, that are going to have head coaching vacancies. I mean, the Bills situation's kind of in a state of flux with the new ownership. You don't know what they're going to do. There's other coaches. Atlanta's got the coach who's more than likely gone. So, there's going to be options out there for Harbaugh. I clearly don't expect him to stay unemployed long.
Well, Jeff Fisher has certainly put his stamp on St. Louis. I mean, this defense, maybe offensively, since Fisher's been there, you almost got to feel bad for St. Louis. He has gone through a myriad of quarterbacks. The franchise guy that everybody thought was going to be the franchise guy has been in and out of the lineup, it seems like, every season that Fisher has been there. And yet he's got that defense cooking where they sacked Kaepernick 8 times in that game and hit him an additional 7 times that didn't count as a sack. They just knocked him to the ground. So they were all over Kaepernick in this game, and certainly that had to have him back there hearing footsteps all game long.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Rams have been very impressive. I mean, if they even had half an offense, they'd be a threat, as a playoff contender in the league. I mean, as they are now, they have a 3-5 record. They're just not putting up any points. Their points for is horrible. They have one of the lowest in the league at 149 points. Their points against is even a little higher, but their defense is doing what it takes, for the most part. Especially lately, they've been looking better. They got a really good test this week too. They got to play, Arizona team we just got done talking about. So what you see here, and I'm going to allude to one of the articles you sent over in our potential outlines here, is Jeff Fisher for the Coach of the Year. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think Bruce Arians is making a heck of a case for another Coach of the Year award the way he's doing with the job he's doing in Arizona. So you could have two Coach of the Year candidates going off, head to head here this week. But I agree with you. I mean, it's a shame. Fisher should have, a little bit more stability at quarterback position. They can't seem to get a running back. Everybody they draft is horrible. They just don't seem to be able to solve, that part of their game. I mean, they have looking at their rushing totals from this game, and they don't get anything. I mean, nobody's got a good yards per carry. They're not getting any yards. You know, it's just, it's a shame. You for a guy like Jeff Fisher, you know he's a good coach. He's a great defensive coach. It's just, you know, you just like to see the guy get a break on offense, and he's just not getting it.
Well, since you brought up the article, let's go to it for a couple moments since we brought up the Rams. I sent the article over there. I'm not saying I necessarily concurred with the argument there, because I'm not sure. I guess I threw it open. I threw it over there to you to kind of elicit your response. I don't think there's enough here from the Rams to be able to seriously look at Jeff Fisher as a coach of the year. Would you?
No, not yet. No, I mean, you generally, somebody who's a coach of the year is going to be at least a playoff contender, or, you know, somebody in the playoffs, or somebody who just has, you know, an off the hook year. I mean, like I said, Bruce Arians is probably the number one contender in my mind right now. Not saying that won't change. You know, there's other guys. I mean, you know, I don't know. Do you consider John Fox in Denver really too much of a coach on that team? I mean, they live and die by Peyton Manning. You know, even Belichick, my coach, I mean, yeah, he's doing an okay job, I would think, this year. But, you know, we'll see. We'll have to see I think it's too early to start talking about coach of the year. I don't know why they, you know, what prompted this article, why they're, you know, week 8 and they're talking about coach of the years. I mean, I mean, Jeff, he always does a good job, but, you know, he's probably, with the way this team is and the record they're going to finish with, he probably won't be a serious contender when it's all said and done for that award. That's just my opinion.
I think some of the impetus has been, you know, having to deal with how many different quarterbacks just this year so far? I mean, they knew Bradford.
They're on three, yeah.
They're on their third, right. So I think some of the impetus for the, suggestion is look at all of the adversity that this head coach has had to put up with and look at the quality of the teams that they have beaten so far in just the first 8 games of the season. Yes, they've only gotten 3 wins, but those 3 wins have been quality wins.
Well, part of the issue, too, with the quarterbacks is, the you know, they lost Bradford. He was clearly their starter. Sean King played for a little bit, but I think they wanted to see what they had in Austin Davis. And that's why you got the, you know, the rookie playing. They want to see what they have. You know, and I guess he just decided that because of, you know, Bradford going down, he's going to find out. And, you know, it may be a coach's decision, but, you know, I don't know. We'll just have to see how the whole season finishes. I think that's a better picture than, you know, right now. Yes, he's doing a great job. He's had other injuries he's had to deal with, too. I mean, Chris Long went down again with an ACL. I mean, he was, you know, Pro Bowl caliber lineman. You know, they're losing big pieces. And, you know, he's still making do. So I get the gist of the article. I can see it almost would sound, though, that, you know, it's just a little too early, I think, is my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And like, again, while I appreciate what St. Louis is doing, I'm not sure whether we would be able to sit back at this moment. And, I mean, look, let's just say, you know, the season ended today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not putting Jeff Fisher in as a coach of the year.
I mean,
regardless of the adversity, regardless of the defensive success, he's not a candidate in my mind for coach of the year.
No, me either. But definitely, you know, he gets, you know, credit for a job well done, and
absolutely.
I don't see that. I think St. Louis is on a good track with him. I hope, you know, this stays. I hope they give him time. You know, I'm sure management's taking into account, you know, Bradford getting 2 ACL injuries in consecutive years. So I think, you know, Fisher's going to have plenty of time. I don't think he's on any kind of hot seat or anything. So
right.
I think, you know, he'll have his time.
Let's take a 1-minute break here. We're going to recognize a couple of our friends, a couple of our sponsors, and we will be right back to you. Give us 1 minute here.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take CLW83 Podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on HerbFM.com.
All right, there you go. Frat House Mike back here with you with the Red Zone Blitz program, coming to you and talking everything that happened on the fields this past weekend in the NFL. Brandon joining me as well. And listen, we'd like to have you join us as well. Also, please jump in. 347-826-9964. Doesn't matter whether it's a topic we're talking about or whether it's something you happen to see in your favorite game. If it's NFL-related, we want to hear it, 347-826-9964. Or if you're listening online, you can jump into our chat room or hit us up on Skype. Last big game we kind of want to highlight here, Brandon, was front and center for us right here at the Frat House, 4:30 Eastern time this Sunday afternoon. And that was the, hashtag Peyton versus Brady game. Denver goes into New England. We didn't know what to expect because earlier in the day we were getting pictures from Gillette Stadium there, whiteout conditions at about 1:30 in the afternoon. They had a blizzard going. And I thought for sure that, some of that might have been lingering over as we got into the 4 o'clock, 4:30 hour. But, well, it wasn't the case. That didn't happen. In fact, you wouldn't even have known by looking at things around there that, in fact, there had been any snow at all.
Yeah, right. They did a nice job of cleaning that stadium.
You're not kidding.
From all the pictures they showed.
But I guess I shouldn't have doubted in the past. I think the record on this was any time these two meet, that is Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, well, I think Tom Brady's got the edge. I think it's 10 games to 5, something to that effect.
Make it 11 to 6 now.
Yeah, make it 11 to 5. Yeah, 11 to 5 now at this point. Denver went down 21-43. They took their second loss of the season. Patriots worked their season up to 7-2. Take a look at the numbers for these two quarterbacks combined. If you like an aerial game, well, you got one in this one. 110 passes between these two quarterbacks. Peyton Manning was 34 of 57 for 438 yards. Tom Brady, 33 of 53 for 333 yards. We had 6 touchdowns in the air between the two of them. Peyton had 2 interceptions, and Tom Brady had an interception of his own. What was the difference here, Brandon? When you look at the box score, it looks pretty darn even, and yet the scoreboard doesn't. Was the difference the turnovers?
It could somewhat. The turnovers, I think, had a little bit, to do with it. The Patriots secondary did a really nice job matching up against all the weapons at Denver. Emmanuel Sanders still got his touches. Demaryius Thomas still got his touches and yards, but they really didn't hurt anybody. I mean, Julius Thomas had two catches for, 30 yards and a touchdown. That's really kind of light for him. So they kind of, they did their job as far as, keeping that team, that's about as well as you're going to see them handle. And Peyton Manning never looked comfortable all game. There was constant pressure on him. Belichick was sending pressure, blitzing linebackers, blitzing safeties, and it clearly, he had him – he had him, shaking early. And even Peyton said, I heard one of his post interviews, he goes, I suck today. That's just the way it is. I don't suck often, but I did today. And so, you know, he might have just had an off game. I'm not going to, you know, as a Patriots fan, I don't read too much into it. The game was played in New England. You know, these two teams could play again in the playoffs. It could be in Denver. It could be a whole different story. So, you know, I'm not going to get too puffed up about it, but it was a nice game. It's an enjoyable game. You know, it was my birthday, so they had to give me a nice present as a Patriot fan.
It was an enjoyable – I mean, all right, now obviously I'm sitting there over on the other side, folks, all right? I'm not rooting for New England. So just to be clear about that, I'm sitting there rooting for the Denver Broncos. From my perspective, you're right. It's always fun to see these two match up. It really is, particularly when it is Brady and it's Peyton Manning. From my perspective, it was frustrating. And as you point out, Brandon, it was frustrating – because it wasn't the Peyton Manning that we so stereotypically are so used to seeing. It was evident almost from the first couple of possessions that he wasn't in the game. This was not the usual Peyton Manning that we've become accustomed to seeing. The timing was off. He seemed to be pushing the ball. He was trying to force plays. He didn't seem to be looking over all of his receivers as clearly as you normally see him do. That's what I came away from it with a little bit. But, again, nonetheless, if you take a look at the box scores, you would look at it and go, really? How in the world did this turn out being a, what was the difference there on the game, 22 points? Is that right? Was it 20?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20. How in the world did this turn out being a three-touchdown difference? Because if you look at the box scores, they're pretty comparable.
Well, Julian Edelman had a punt return for a touchdown, too. And anytime you get a defensive or a special teams touchdown, it kind of sometimes skews the box score a little bit because you're getting 7 points from, you know, basically no offensive output. So, you know, that could skew it a little bit. But that only accounts for 7 points. So, you know, I'm just trying to point it out. I mean, I don't really know why it is what it is. I know some of the turnovers the Broncos did have were when they were ready to score, which meant they already racked up all the yardage getting down to the red zone. So, you know, when you're throwing a turnover, you know, at the 10-yard line or, you know, I believe one of them bounced off Wes Welker's hand right around the 10-yard line. He got hit in the back, and I believe that actually there's some question as to whether or not he actually is injured now. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out coming, you know, forward next week. But he never did return to the game. He was listed as probable but never came back. And I don't know if that was due to, you know, the injury or just due to the fact that, you know, the score was out of control and there's really no point. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that, you know, how it plays with him being, you know, available for the next game this week. But, yeah, I mean, the Broncos just never got into their rhythm. Peyton never got into his rhythm. You know, the Patriots clearly came out from the beginning of the game and just, you know, they were going. I mean, Denver did score the first touchdown, but, you know, from then on it was just, you know, look out, here we come.
Yep.
I mean, the Brady went right down the field the first drive. It ended in a field goal, but from then on it was,
yeah,
that was about it.
Yep. And so, as you point out, more than likely, if we're lucky, we're going to see these two again later on in the second season.
I think we'll see that one.
I think so, too.
In the AFC, these two always find their way to each other in the playoffs, and the Colts look good. The Colts could maybe get in the way somewhere along the line, but I don't really see anybody else. I mean, the AFC North, you know, every time you think you have a strong team, I mean, Pittsburgh's looking good right now, but, you know, every time you think you got a contender, you know, for a while there, we were all sold on the Bengals. Then, you know, the Ravens were gangbusters, you know, and now Pittsburgh looks good the last couple of weeks, so we'll see how that division shakes out. So they get done beating each other up, they ain't going to have anybody left to play anyway.
Right.
So, you know, I think you're right. I think we'll get a rematch of this in the playoffs at some point.
All right, a couple of big stories I think we want to get into here, obviously that resulted out of this past weekend's games, but are certainly going to have a longer-range impact onto this week and perhaps even subsequent weeks as we go forward, maybe even season ending or season long ones. And let's start off with the Philadelphia Eagles for a moment, who did manage to take their record to 6-2 by going down to Houston, and they beat the Texans by 10 points, 31-21. Now, that was as a result of a two-quarterback tandem effort between Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles. After Nick Foles suffered a cracked clavicle and ended up leaving the game after going 10-13 for 124 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Enter Mark Sanchez. Sanchez proceeded to go 15-22, 202 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Word at this point, Brandon, is that the Eagles are probably looking at Mark Sanchez for at least the next 6 weeks. Could be 8 weeks. Could be right up until through the end of the season. But minimally, probably through to, let's see, week 14 maybe, when the Eagles will play the Seattle Seahawks. Any thoughts on you from regarding this?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Mark Sanchez came into the game, looked good, played well. You know, that's typical for, you know, a backup. I think you had brought up Brandon Whedon. You know, from a week ago, he came into the game mid-pack and looked good for a quarter. Do I think Mark Sanchez is going to be as good as Foles? No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I think now that the teams are preparing for Mark Sanchez, I think Mark Sanchez, you know, yes, he may be better than he was at the Jets. He may have better people around him, better weapons on the offense. Yeah, Chip Kelly's system may fit him. We'll see. But, you know, when he was at the Jets, he would make bad mistakes at the wrong time. He could be pressured. And, you know, with the teams now preparing to play him, you know, we'll see. We'll see how he goes. I think the Eagles are still going to be able to make the playoffs. I don't think Sanchez is a bad enough quarterback that, you know, they missed the playoffs. I think they'll still make the playoffs. But, you know, he's a step down. Nick Foles, even though he's not playing as good as he was last year, he's been good. He's been throwing a few more interceptions. But, you know, I wouldn't be jumping up and down with Mark Sanchez. And now you're going to say I'm tainted because he's an ex-Jet, and I don't like the Jets or Dolphins. But I was never that enamored with Sanchez. Sanchez has had two really bad shoulder injuries over the course of his career. So, you know, he's got a lot of mileage on him, you know, and he has – he every once in a while, and maybe it's just me or maybe it's just the Jets or whatever, but it seems like he loses his mind. He just makes a bonehead play. I mean, he's good for, you know – a bonehead play a week almost when he was with the Jets. Maybe it'll be a different story with Philadelphia. Maybe Chip Kelly will tailor it, you know, a little better. I don't see him switching up his focus away from, you know, throwing. I mean, he hasn't been feeding McCoy all year, which makes very little sense to me. I mean, LeSean McCoy was the, you know, leading rusher of the NFL last year, and he's not getting the touches he was getting prior. So I'm not sure. You know, maybe McCoy's was started the year dinged up a little and that nobody knew or something. I don't know, but he certainly hasn't, you know, been feeding him like I think he should. I mean, you know, they should be looking at him like Dallas looks at DeMarco Murray. Feed him the ball, you know. Let him shoulder the load, you know. Throw it, screen passes to him, that kind of thing. I think he'd be, you know, I think the team would be better off. But, you know, they're winning, so you can't argue with that. What I'm saying is not bashing on the Eagles or Chip Kelly. I'm just a little perplexed, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he may have to change that a little bit now with the quarterback. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. Maybe Sanchez will come out and look like a Pro Bowler and, you know, set the world on fire to the point where when Foles is healed, there'll be a huge controversy here in the Philadelphia area. Like, well, who do we stick with? Well, I think the fans will be clamoring for Foles the minute he's healthy. That's just my opinion, because I don't think Sanchez is going to be all that, but we'll see.
There are analysts in around the Philadelphia region who have pointed out that Sanchez brings a little bit different aspect to the position of quarterback, that he's a little stronger, he's a little more mobile, he certainly has a quicker release than Nick Foles does. that he can take he can take a snap from the center position as opposed to constantly being back in the shotgun, and that all of these things, in fact, will enhance that Chip Kelly design of the offense.
Well, that may be the case. He may have a quicker release. He may have, you know, quicker feet in order to, you know, be able to drop back faster. I would disagree with anybody who says he has a stronger arm. This guy's had two reconstructive shoulder operations over the course of his career. I highly doubt he has a stronger throwing arm than Nick Foles. Nick Foles can throw a decent deep ball. He's been doing a pretty good job with Macklin, you know, and getting, you know, the 40, 50-yard downfield passes. So I don't see how he's stronger. You know, he may be, like I said, he might, he may be a little quicker with the feet. He may be able to elude a rush a little better. You know, I don't know how he is. I don't think he's necessarily that much faster as a, you know, straight running quarterback than Foles would be, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, it may not be too bad. It may not be a bad situation. You know, Chip Kelly may be able to, you know, adapt it and tailor it enough that it doesn't affect him. And, you know, they're strong in other areas. The defense has played well all year. They've been good on special teams. You know, they have talented skill position players on offense. So they should be okay. I don't see Sanchez as, you know, screwing things up per se. I just I think Foles is a better quarterback. I don't think it's I don't even think it's close, to be honest with you. But that's just my opinion. I've never been that impressed with Sanchez, and maybe Sanchez didn't get a fair shake in New York. He might never have had the, you know, the LeSean McCoy back behind him kind of thing, and you know, or the even the receivers around him that he has now. So maybe I am cutting him a little short, but at the same token, you know, the butt fumble play, you know, I mean, stuff like that, you get that every year from him. I mean, he's famous for boneheaded plays. Like, he just loses his mind. And he'll throw that one pass that's like, huh? Why did you throw that? You know, I mean, I've seen, you know, and granted, the Jets are probably playing from behind a lot more than the Eagles do. So, you know, maybe he will be okay. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things he has going in his favor right now. He has a much better team around him. I think Chip Kelly's showing he's definitely good at this level. He could, you know, given another year or two, he could be considered one of the best in the NFL as far as active coaches. I mean, he's certainly this is his second full season. He's going to have the numbers. He's going to have his win to loss ratio is going to be phenomenal. So, you know, you can't argue that so far. I think Sanchez has better tools.
Well, you will. Everybody can tune in tomorrow evening, because I can tell you right now this will be, excuse me, a major topic on tomorrow night's Inside the War Nest program, our newest All Philadelphia Eagles program that you can hear right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, hosted by Jim Williams and myself, and that comes to you right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Are you going to save your Sanchez opinion for that, or are you going to tell me what you think? Because, I mean, you kind of did a lead into it, but I never really got an opinion. What do you think? You think it's good, bad? How do you think the Eagles are going to do under Sanchez? What do you think?
I have never been a big fan of Nick Foles, and I still am not. Do I think that Mark Sanchez might be an improvement over him? Yeah, I do.
Wow.
Do I feel particularly more confident with Mark Sanchez than I would with Nick Foles? No. But then I've been a skeptic Eagles fan all season long. I haven't been drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm not one that necessarily believes, you know, look, they're 6-2. That's fine. All right, maybe they'll make the playoffs. I don't see them going more than one round in the playoffs. That's my personal opinion. I just don't think this team is good enough.
Well, if your estimate with the injury is true, I mean, wouldn't we have Foles back for the playoffs? I mean, wouldn't the Eagles have Nick Foles back under the helm, you think? Or?
Well, I think the question, though, becomes this. Let's just say for a moment, playing out the scenario, that in fact we have to rely upon Mark Sanchez to carry us through to the very last game of the season, which is on December 28th against the Giants. And let's say in that period of time, the Eagles go from being 6-2 to being, 11 and help me out with my math. That would be 11-5.
11-5, correct.
Yeah, 11-5. Let's say they go 11-5. And they make the playoffs. They make the playoffs. With all due respect, what coach in the right mind is going to give the job back to Nick Foles, who has been sitting out for the past 8 weeks? Aren't you going to go with the guy that, you know, got you to that point? That's where I think it would go. I think you go with Mark Sanchez, don't you?
I think it would depend on how they get to their record of whatever they end up with, you know, and, you know, how confident they feel Foles could step right back in. I mean, look at it through this way. Through 8 games, Foles took them to a 6-2 record. I mean, okay, that's pretty solid. So Sanchez now gets 8 games to try it. You think he goes 6-2 as well? That would be a 12-4 record. That's a pretty solid NFL, you know, season right there. Then you have an argument, but if what you say is true, they're going to end up 11-5, well, the next 8 games aren't going to go as well as the first 8 did, so I would think you would want to go back to Foles. I guess it would depend on this. It would depend on if he gets any game action prior to the playoffs and how healthy he is. In other words, say he gets to the 6-week part, and he could play if he had to, but they choose to keep him out an extra week just to let him heal a little more, but he's practicing. That way he maybe comes in and plays the last game, you know, against the Giants, as you said, to get a little game action. Maybe plays a half just to get, you know, crisp. And then, you know, has Sanchez finish it, something like that. Then you go with Foles. I think it all depends on how he deals.
Obviously, that would become obvious that you were going to go with Foles.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you, I mean, if Sanchez gets us a winning record, and maybe it's not even an identical winning record to what we have right now. Maybe it's not. Maybe he doesn't replicate a 6-2. But like I said, maybe it's a 5-3 situation. He gets us a winning record in the games that he has to play, and Nick Foles is yet to hit the field, but is expected that he would be ready to go in the event of a playoff. I got to be honest. If I'm a coach, I think I'm going with the guy that's the hottest, and the hottest is the guy that has been playing, not the guy that's been sitting rehabbing for 8 weeks. I don't know. Do you want to do that in a playoff situation? Put a guy in who hasn't played on the field in a field of play for 8 weeks? That's really – I don't know if that's really prudent.
Well, I think it would be, again, the quality of those wins that he plays. I mean, if he's winning barely by the skin of his teeth, throwing 2-3 interceptions a game, and they're eking out, like, you know, 28-27 wins, no, you go with Foles. Yeah, you know, if he comes out and he looks good and he's not throwing interceptions, all right, then you got a decision. You know, we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out, I think, at this point.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, you can win, and you can win ugly. We've seen it. We've seen it in the NFL before. I mean, Jay Cutler does it all the time when the Bears are winning. He wins ugly. I don't think he ever wins pretty. You know what I mean?
Well, with all due respect, point to a game that the Eagles have played this year that hasn't been a win ugly situation. The Eagles have not had a single win, I think, that has really all been all that pretty. So.
Well, I'll be honest with you. There's been very few games where I've gotten a feeling watching the Eagles game that they were going to lose. I mean, they look like they're going to win more often than not.
Right.
And that's just, you know, I guess that's just the way I see it.
All right. Well, believe it or not, we've got to wrap it up already. Yes, indeed. It's hard to imagine, but we've gone through our hour here. We had a couple of stories we wanted to get to. But that's all right, because we'll have time to get to them next week, or hey, maybe even Thursday night. Thursday night is the thing you want to do. You want to be tuning in to us for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And again, don't forget, Inside the War Nest tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time with Jim Williams and myself. For Brandon and myself, Frat House Mike, we thank you for listening in this evening to the Red Zone Blitz. And catch us here again tomorrow night. Catch you then.